Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we'll be talking to one, Adele Shaw. Adele is a certified horse behavior consultant through the IAABC and an internationally recognized mentor and trainer focused on creating a positive relationship between horse and human through science-based training and care practices. Drawn to horses labeled as troublemakers and lost causes from an early age, Adele has always had a passion for understanding the why behind behavior and a deep desire to help horses find their way back to wellness. This holistic approach examines the horse's environment, lifestyle, and physical and mental soundness to ensure that the horses are not simply surviving, but truly thriving in their life and relationships with their human caretakers. As a teacher, Adele is supportive and understanding of both horse and human, and tailors her lessons to provide the most personalized, accessible, and ethically minded coaching possible. Her approach goes beyond method by offering flexible training and care systems, the well-being of the horse and the empowerment of the student always remaining the primary goals. In addition to her hands-on work with specialized rehabilitation cases at her ranch in Texas, Adele maintains an active role in the equestrian community through her clinics, online student programs, blog, podcast, and social media outreach. As she connects with students across the globe, Adele remains dedicated to making information on behavioral science, positive reinforcement, Lima principles, humane hierarchy, and species-appropriate care practices accessible and achievable for every horse owner through her business, The Willing Equine. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Adele Shaw to the show today, who is patiently waiting by. Adele, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And when I say thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy, you've been hanging out with us at Animal Training Academy for a couple of years now via the membership. Mm-hmm. So thank you for making time to come and hang out with us in this Zoom call recording today for our audience. But you're very familiar with our academy and I believe our
definitely
whys resonate strongly.
Yes, for sure. I've felt very much ever since I found Animal Training Academy, it was like, these are my people. Very drawn to the community you've created and just the whys, like you said, of why everybody's there and what their purpose is.
And we've got, I believe, members in our own communities, the Willing Equine community, Animal mm-hmm. Training Academy community that cross over. I know you graciously hosted a New Zealander at your ranch in Texas just before the madness started in 2020, wasn't it?
It was as the madness was starting, actually. Bex Tasker was with me and we did a clinic, I hosted her. And then we were heading to the Clicker Expo in Louisville and everything seemed to power down right at the moment as we arrived in Louisville. It was quite stressful, quite a stressful experience, especially since we were worried about Bex being able to get back home. So it was definitely as 2020 was melting down.
Yeah, I remember I was worried about Bex, knowing that she was over there and following along with what was happening with the conference, and then was happy to see a photo of Bex and Ava Bertelsen together, and was like, yay. she got some engagement there, but alas, she had to return before that started, because that got cancelled, that Clicker Expo, at the last, very last second, didn't it?
We were standing in line checking in for registration when they closed the expo. So yes, it was literally, we arrived, we saw a couple of people, I got to talk to like two or three people, and then that was it. So wow, it was quite an interesting experience.
Yeah, I think probably quite a number of people listening to this podcast can feel you there, because they might have been in that line with you, behind you, you don't know.
Probably.
Hey, let's dive into where you got started, Adele. Can you take us back? Can you take the listeners of the show back to where you first learned about positive reinforcement, horse training, animal training, and share some stories with us? We love stories here on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So my journey with learning how to work with animals with positive reinforcement is quite an up and down one. I specifically started with dogs. I had a background working with dogs in a, I don't even want to go down too far down it, but it was very coercive, very, you know, forceful. And I got interested in agility, and agility was the first introduction I had to training with a clicker and with positive reinforcement. It was a lightweight introduction, as far as we were just implementing it as it seemed necessary, and particularly in agility. So I didn't use it outside of the agility ring or training, but then I started to notice how useful it was in working with my dogs, and how clear it was and how eager they were to participate. So I started exploring using it outside of agility, and that was my first real taste of clicker training and positive reinforcement. From there, well, during this whole time, I had horses. I have been a very active horse person since I was about 8 years old, I would say. I've had horses since I was 10. I've been an equestrian pretty much my whole life. I competed extensively in hunter jumper and dressage and jumper. And all this time while I was working with dogs, though, and I started branching out into working at a boarding kennel and learning more about basic obedience and how to use positive reinforcement in the rest of my work with my dogs, I was still using traditional methods and natural horsemanship methods and all of that with horses. That was pretty much the standard in my mind. Horses were different. Horses were large. Horses were dangerous. You know, all the, you know, they needed to be dominated. The herd hierarchy, they needed the alpha. I mean, all of the reasons were there in my mind. And I had really compartmentalized, you know, my work with dogs versus my work with horses. And I actually went down the path of becoming a certified dog trainer through different organizations, and worked under another trainer, a mentor trainer, and did a lot with dogs. I felt very much like it was a good place to be, but it didn't quite feel like home, if that makes sense. Like it wasn't my driving passion. Like, I love dogs. I have dogs now. I have two. I have an Australian Shepherd and a Rottweiler, and I still work with them daily and love working with them. And I still dabble with agility every once in a while, but my real passion has always been with horses. And it wasn't until many years later, that after I had explored lots of different ways of working with horses, and I had gone down learning lots of different trainers' methods and ways of fixing horses and troubled horses, and this is through just a gradual exposure of working with a lot of different horses and owning my own horses that had problems, or I even had friends or trainers even that they had a problem horse. And one thing that's really interesting in the show world with horses is that, especially in the certain show ring type, they don't really want to work with the difficult ones. It's the horse gets along, the horse does what you want it to do, or they get passed along, right? They just get handed off. And so I was always very intrigued by these horses and working with them and trying to connect with them. My approach at the time was not what I would do now. Let's just put it that way. And it wasn't until I had a horse that I actually got for recreational. Like it's kind of an interesting road there, a bumpy road, as far as I had at one point decided I was going to give up on horses because I had back to back, I had lost two very special horses to me and I couldn't handle it emotionally anymore. So I swore off horses. Lasted for approximately, no, actually it was exactly 5 days. 5 days, that's how long I went without horses. And I went out with my my family and we started looking for just family trail horses. And that's when I came upon a beautiful buckskin mare that I fell in love with. It was love at first sight kind of thing. And I started working with her. So I bought her and brought her home and we quickly realized that she was quite the troubled soul. She had had a lot happen to her, very rough handling, very rough training. And she was the one to break my idea, my compartmentalizing, my my categorizing of like dogs are different than horses. I mean, she pushed me because of how difficult the situation was and because of how dedicated I was to her as far as I couldn't give up on her. It made me want to go and explore other options. So that's when I started exploring clicker training for horses. And it was definitely a rough start to begin with. We can go into that more, but that's kind of how it started with horses is I eventually met the horse that was going to be the one that said, nope, it's the same for us. We learn the same way. We need the same amount of attention that the dogs do. Like there's not this different way of learning that horses have. But yeah, so it all originally started out with dogs and we moved into working with horses at that point.
So was there a particular behavior or unsolvable problem with this individual that made you search for new? Well, how did it happen? Like, was it like gradual? Was it sudden?
So I brought her home and quickly she started showing me how very shut down she was. She had been a lot of learned helplessness, a lot of suppression. A lot of her training was through, I'm like having flashbacks in my mind of watching her original owner ride her. And it makes me sad, but it was very rough handling. And so then she got to me and I am not going to be this big manly, you know, whatever big dude that's going to force her and, you know, this 1,000-pound animal. I just physically can't do it. One and two, I don't want to. So she started showing me really quickly how scared she was. She was scared of having the saddle put on. I couldn't catch her. So it would take me sometimes 2 to 3 hours to catch her out of the pasture. I couldn't put reins over her neck. So they had done different techniques of riding or whatever ways of riding where they had flipped the reins over her neck on either side to make her go faster. And so she was terrified of having ropes or reins put over her neck. What else did she do? Once I would get the saddle on, she became very what a lot of people will call being cold backed, which sometimes it is medically related, but a lot of times I think it's fear that we are just putting under a label that makes us feel like it's the horse's problem, that they're just cold back. They just need to be warmed up. You just got to ride them through that cow hopping type, crow hopping, sorry. Actually, I can't remember if it's cow hopping, crow hopping. I don't know. It's hopping. It's a hopping behavior where they're like on all four hopping around. And then she started bucking, bolting, and rearing. So we went full rodeo for a while. It was quite intense and scary. It was scary for me. It was not what I had wanted to sign up for. I just wanted a casual horse to ride on trails with my family. And I had, up to this point, had never dealt with a horse that reared under saddle. I had dealt with buckers. I had dealt with bolters. But the rearing was a new thing for me. So yeah, it just kind of started escalating. It started off very subtle as far as not wanting to be caught, little what I considered at the time, you know, misbehaving episodes where she would throw her head up and kind of crow hop around. And then it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. So to the point where I could no longer get on her safely. I couldn't even at one point get on her and walk her into the arena without her trying to bolt with me. And again, I've dealt with a lot of horses that bolted, and I felt like I could work through it. And I tried for a while. We tried a lot of different techniques. We tried working with different, you know, professionals and different methods. And I was very dedicated and very consistent about it. I brought out everything I had learned from many years up to this point. And for her, it would sometimes temporarily suppress the behavior for a little bit, but most of the time it just made it worse. So yeah, so that's kind of our little adventure leading up to me going, well, I had this moment where I was in the saddle and I'm literally standing in the middle of the arena the one time she's not bolting under me. And we're just sitting there and I am just sitting in the saddle. And I remember just crying while I'm sitting in the saddle and with the horse under me. And she's just sitting there heaving and huffing and puffing because we've just been just trying to duke it out, I guess. I don't even know what was going on. We were battling it out. And I was just like crying because I was like, I either have to euthanize this horse or I have to send her off to auction where she'll probably end up either as a broodmare or to slaughter. Or I just have to let her sit in my pasture, which at the time was not an option for me. It seemed ludicrous to have a horse that you didn't ride. My thinking has come a long way since then, but at the time that was not possible. I couldn't have a horse that wasn't doing a job, that didn't have a purpose in life. So I felt very much like I was between a rock and a hard place. And my only option was to try something different, which at the time I didn't know what different was. But then I got on social media. And this is where my love of social media came from. Well, I have a love-hate relationship with social media, but at the time it was pure love. And I had friends that were experimenting with clicker training and they were like, you know, Adele, you should try, like, just give it, like, what's the worst that can happen? She's already so messed up. Like there's not anything, it can't get worse. Right. Spoiler alert. It actually did get worse. It got, so I decided to start experimenting with it a little bit and, without any guidance, without any ideas of where I was going with it and only with my background in dog training. And the science is all there. The principles are all there, but with horses, a little bit different. It's more like dealing with larger exotic species as far as their size. If they start getting pushy around the food, it becomes a little intimidating. It's just a little bit different than, you know, a dog jumping up on you versus a horse jumping up on you is a totally different feeling and experience. So, we gave it a try for a little while and she actually became worse in my opinion, or Mike's at the time. That's what I was thinking. She started, unpacking even further, showing me more and more of what had been done damage wise, mentally, physically. And just kind of as a side note, I know people will be listening and might wonder this, but I went through all of the medical, assessments. I had her saddle fit. I had the farrier, like I had everything done. And I'm a big believer that I can never fully rule out pain as a cause for behavior, but that was something that I was actively working on with her, is trying to rule out all causes of pain while working on the training aspect. So just kind of wanted to throw that in there, but she started getting really pushy, but I don't even like the word pushy. She just started getting really amped up because not only now do we have the anxiety and the stress behaviors, the anxious related behaviors around me as a person, we now involved food and I was using too high a value reinforcer and lots of sugary stuff. I'm sure I used molasses treats and all kinds of who knows what. So now we had like anxiety around food and then anxiety around people. And it was just like this disaster that was waiting to happen. And she just started circling around me. She started like running into me and like, there was just all kinds of stuff that went way wrong. So I actually put it aside for like 3 months. I stopped using clicker training for about 3 months, saying that it didn't work. It maybe worked for a different horse, but it wouldn't work for her, you know, because she was special. And then I had friends that were, I'm very thankful to them. They encouraged me to give it a try again, but this time do a little bit more research and do a little bit more studying and get some more guidance. And I have never looked back since then. So I'm hooked now.
So what is, let's start with Texas. What's Texas like? I know, like, people in the situation where they're learning about positive reinforcement and clicker training with equines are sometimes in situations where the other humans around them, additionally working with equines, are reaching for different tools in their toolbox. I'm lucky at Animal Training Academy. I never interact with that choice of tool by the people that come into contact with Animal Training Academy. It's all positive reinforcement. But what was it like for you being in your local geographical area? Or was that not important because you were using social media and your influences weren't actually confined to your area in Texas?
So I think this is, again, plays into that love of social media part, because it allowed me to step out of my geographical location. My friends that were influencing me to utilize positive reinforcement, both of them that I can, they're both based in the UK. And you know, I'm all the way here in Texas, and I have developed so many friends over social media since then. And, so I really disconnected almost completely or entirely from my old horse community, because they were very, critical of the use of food reinforcers and clicker training. They thought it was pretty ridiculous. I have no doubt that my name has been talked about in some circles around this area. I actually hear about it where they think I'm kind of crazy. Here in Texas, I will say I live in a larger city that in some ways is progressive, as far as the care of animals and the training aspect. We have a lot of very forward-thinking, positive reinforcement type dog trainers in our area. So that has helped tremendously as far as my local connections go. Just being able to kind of pull that aspect into it. Like, you do this with your dogs, you know, this works for horses too. So, but I think where I've run into the most problem is working with clients who are interested in trying something new, but then get a lot of heat from their friends, their horse community. And so I feel very protective of them, and I feel a little bit defensive. I'm like, you know, you can bring that doubt to me, but to my brand new learner, my student, I have a hard time with that. I get a little bit defensive about them. I'm like, I just want to protect them, keep them in my little, you know, just with our community and people who support them. But it's growing. I see it growing in some parts of the country or the world more so than others. There's a lot of very rough handling. I'm trying to think of the right words to not, I don't want to, yeah, anyway. So there's a lot of very rough handling, a lot of very old style, ride them out, break the colts, you know, start them young. You got to get, you know, I talked to so many trainers where they say, if you wait until after the horse is 4 years old, then it's not possible to break them anymore because they are too strong. They know what they can get away with. You know, all that type of mentality is very prevalent in this area. So there's definitely some challenges, but social media has helped a lot with being able to work around those challenges.
Well, one reason I'm curious about that is I'm curious because of the main stakeholders in this podcast show, and it is the audience. And maybe there's someone in a similar situation to you, or now they're in a similar situation to what you were back then. And I know you've recently, as we said in your bio, completed your IAABC certification. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And what that suggests is, you know, your dedication to grow and to learn and to always uptake and bring in new information for yourself. So I can imagine sitting on your horse crying. and I feel, once again, the listeners of this show, there's people in the audience who have been like, oh, my God, that's me. Whether it's with their dog or their horse or their parrot or whatever, their human learners that they have in their team, if they're a manager, whatever context they're working in, whatever earthling species they're working with. And so it takes courage and bravery, I think, to put down everything you know or everything you think you know. And start again.
Yes, I think that is, I'm sure many other people, other mentors and trainers and everything have experienced this before in helping other human learners. Making that change is very humbling and emotionally draining and challenging. I feel a lot of times like I should work towards, like, while I do this, I actively pursue learning more about not therapy, but being able to talk to people and help them through those transitions. Because it takes a lot. It takes a lot, like you said, to set aside what you think you know or what you did know and actively pursue something that's completely contradictory to everything you've been taught and everything you know. And I can't tell you how many times growing up I was told over and over again in very stern voices or chastised or corrected for feeding horses by hand. You were not supposed to do that. You'll make them bushy and dangerous, and they'll think they're the dog and that they're not dogs. And I still, to this day, people like try and correct me for feeding horses or how I feed them. And I just sit there and I smile at them and I'm like, thank you. I'm doing good. Thanks. But it can take a long time to work through that transition process and to allow yourself to be a learner again, a beginner learner, a novice learner, when, especially if you've been doing what you've been doing for a long time. I work with students and clients that have been working with horses for 30 plus years, and it's challenging for them to step back and say, all right, I know what I know about horses so far, and some of that, or a lot of that, is still useful information, like how to fit a saddle, or maybe they've learned how to read body language accurately, or maybe they know a lot about farrier work and hoof and all of that stuff, or how to groom a horse. Like, all of that stuff is still very useful information, but relearning how your horse learns and what you should do in response to certain situations is challenging and it takes time. And I think that was one of the biggest challenges for me, was it, I initially started with just this, I'm going to keep doing what I'm going to do, what I've been doing, but I'm just going to add a clicker and food to the situation. And a lot of people probably listening to this episode will be like, well, I could tell you right now, that's probably not going to work. But at the time that seemed like, well, my horses already know these things. I'm just going to make it a little bit better by adding the click and the food. There was a lot of fallout from that. And that's what I experienced the first time around with my mare. Her name was Tiger. And then going forward from there, it took years of unpacking my learned behavior. So when a horse gets too close to me, how do I respond to that? Well, old me would have chased the horse out of my space or smacked them on the shoulder or backed them up abruptly. Right. So that was ingrained behavior. Like, I have been done it over and over again and been reinforced by it because the horse backed up out of my space. And then I quote won, right. And, just stopping myself, learning how to stop myself and be like, okay, deep breath, Adele, we're going to try something different this time. Like, why is the horse stepping into your space? How can we teach them to do something different? How are we going to do this with positive reinforcement? We're not going to punish that behavior. Also, while simultaneously staying safe. And that's the other aspect when you're dealing with a large animal. It is unsafe for them to step into your space. I should say, to push on you, like actively move into your space. Like, I was just recently working with a horse where anytime she would get startled, she would just body slam into you. So obviously that's not safe. So learning to find that, like, how do we apply all these principles and positive reinforcement and retrain not only ourselves, but then learn how to also stay safe at the same time. It was just a big learning curve for me. And it didn't come overnight. It wasn't just like I made this decision to learn clicker training and to start using a food and a clicker and magically everything was cured. No, it took a long time. I'm still learning. There are still times where I go, why am I doing this? Oh, well, this is how I used to do it. I can't believe I haven't given this up yet. I need to change this and try something else. And so I'm not exactly sure where I was going with all that, but hopefully it was useful. It's just the giving yourself time to adjust and the grace to relearn how you've been doing everything with your horses is so important and something that I did not realize was going to be necessary for myself. And then also I had to learn how to do that then for my clients and my students as well, and teaching them how they can do that for themselves. So yeah, it's a big learning curve.
Well, hey, I always say that the goal of this show is to get our guests passion talking. So if I can get statements like, I'm not sure where I was going with all of that, I feel like I've achieved that task. And it's an interesting topic of conversation to me, because one thing that I've been sharing just this past week is to green trainers who say, I don't know what to do. Should I do this? And it's kind of this conversation that you have to be brave. What my suggestion was, I'm not saying you have to be, this is just an opinion. Be brave and give something a go, which is what you did. The risk, I think, is that it doesn't go well or it gets worse. And then you make an assumption that positive reinforcement doesn't work. And just know,
like I did.
yeah. And I think is a common piece of feedback that coaches get, or those who are teaching others to use positive reinforcement get, or people that are new to positive reinforcement might feel, because you need to mix seemingly bravery, like you did, with with celebrating the approximation of failing.
But
I noticed that when you were talking, then you referred to yourself as the old you. and the new you. So I'm curious to know how you look back and reflect on this now. Do you see a divide between Adele pre-X date and Adele post-X date, or are you grateful for or something else? You've used the word grace a couple of times, which is a word that I resonate with. How do you view that process now? Was that the same Adele or was that the old Adele?
Man, that's a tough question. I don't know that there's a specific date that I'm referring to when it's like, I guess I could say like old me versus new me. I'm sure in 10, 20 more years, I'll look back at this. I'll be like, that's middle me. So I tend to view my self and my growth as just this ongoing process that never stops. But it's also not, I try not to make it a goal-oriented process either, because I feel like that being me, who I am, it stresses me out a lot to be like, I need to get to a certain point, and if I don't get there, I'm not going to be happy with myself. That's my current self, what I'm working on with myself, is being a little bit, actually I just listened to something and they were talking about being, not viewing the world as, RSA, I guess it was goal oriented value versus like, no, it was, I don't even remember, but it was not viewing the world through goal oriented lenses and then trying to view the world through value oriented lenses. So just trying to find value in every aspect of your life moving forward. So that's where I'm currently at right now, is trying to be a little bit less goal oriented with my training, as well as my, you know, where I want to be with my business and myself growth and all that. But as far as like my old me, when I refer to that, I'm really kind of talking about pre-positive reinforcement. I feel like when I, specifically with horses, I should say, I feel like when I stepped into the positive reinforcement land, like I refer to it, when I stepped into positive reinforcement land with horses, it really opened up so many doors for me in how I looked at the people around me and how I viewed their behavior, how I viewed my own behavior, and even looked at myself just objectively, like, you know, what's going on with me. And then also how I saw horses. I mean, I have never enjoyed spending time with horses and being around horses more than I do now. And that's saying a lot because I've been around horses since I was 8. So I can confidently tell you that I enjoy horses more now than I did as an 8-year-old, because I feel like as an 8-year-old, that joy and the desire to like feed my horses cookies and make them feel happy and love me and all that, you know, like the whole, you know, spirit or Black Beauty type storyline was really, you know, suppressed out. Like it was pushed out of me very early because, oh, the horse is going to take advantage of you, little girl. You got to push them around and tell them who's boss. And so it just kind of got crushed, that little dream of mine as an 8-year-old. And so now I feel like that's back. And not only for horses, but for everything. When I'm working with other people or just interacting with them, when I'm interacting with myself, when I'm reflecting back on my own behavior, when I am, I have 3 kids. So I have a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. So it's helped me tremendously as a parent too. A lot actually, as a parent, it has changed a lot because there was pre-me as a, old me as a parent and new me as a parent as well. And that transition came with understanding positive reinforcement and behavior. So I can't tell you that there's quite an exact date because it was an evolution, so to speak, from when I first picked up that first clicker. Like there was a process that happened and there was different stages. There was learning about the clicker and positive reinforcement. Then there was learning about choice and control. Like that just opened up a whole new set. Like that was just mind blowing to me and also terrifying. I will be completely honest and tell you that I knew and understood like the value of choice and control for the learner and all of that. But I would not embrace giving up that control and not trying to manually manipulate my horse's behavior and trying to make them, because in the beginning, I still think when I think back about it, when I look back on it, in the very beginning, when I picked up the clicker, I was still focused on the effectiveness, right? This is going to be an effective method. This is going to get me the results I want. This is going to make this horse rideable. This is going to make me be able to have this casual trail horse that I wanted. It's going to make this horse safe. So I was still so focused on the outcome. I was still focused on that goal, right? And I wasn't necessarily concerned as much about the horse's viewpoint as to what was going on and their mental state and their mental, emotional health and all of that. And it wasn't until I started, I guess the precursor to the choice and control part was learning about body language and interpreting my horses, their signs of stress and the signs of negative emotional states and all of that. When I really embraced that idea and started learning about that, that opened up a whole nother set of doors for me. So it's just been this process of unpacking and learning and exploring and just feeling like the world looks so very different to me now than it did even when I was 20 or even when I was 25 or 18 or 16 or 8. Like there was just the pre-understanding behavior and pre-understanding positive reinforcement and all that. And then there was the after. And so that's kind of how I view the old me and the new me.
Yeah, I think we have a lot to learn from you and the mindset you have. We've recently adopted within our academy information with regards to the growth mindset and fixed mindset. So you would, in my personal opinion, be labeled a growth mindset orientated person because it can be terrifying, I feel. Was learning about choice and control part of your engagement in LLA? Am I correct? You did LLA with Susan Freeman?
I did. I had started learning about it before then. I actually don't know where I was first introduced to the idea. Probably through social media, to be honest. I get a lot. There's a lot of really great information out there. If you know where to look and you can stay out of the drama, there is a lot of really great information out there. I learned a lot from the LLA course as well. Actually, from that course, I think kind of sticking with that growth mindset aspect, before going into the course and then after coming out of that course, I knew, you know, the four quadrants and the black and white lines between, you know, I don't know, just the idea of respondent conditioning versus operant conditioning. Like, everything was still very black and white in my mind. Like, there was hard lines, like you were either doing this or you're doing that. And then coming out of that course, I was like, and never mind, trash that, like, or not even trash it, but just like, let's build on that. Like, that was a great starting point, but now we need to just like branch out and muddy the lines and make everything beautiful, but messy. And just anyway, which is also terrifying, because again, I tend to fall into that. I want to control the outcome. I want to reach a goal. I want to get to where I want to be. I want it to be very simple, black and white, step one, step two, step three. I'm a recipe follower. When I bake or cook, which actually I don't bake, but when I cook, I need a recipe. Even if I've done the recipe 10,000 times, I still need that recipe in front of my face because I want to make sure I follow it just right as it's supposed to. So that's just kind of who I am as a person. So being able to do that, being able to step back and be like, okay, great place to start with my learning. Fantastic place to start. It created so much for me, but now let's dive in a little bit deeper and the lines are going to be a little bit muddier, and that's okay. Like, this is what's beautiful about it. Right. And the individuality of the different learners. There was just a lot that I learned from that course, obviously, but it's a great course. But yeah, so with that growth mindset, there's always something more to add into it.
So from that course, I learned about labels, and you used the word terrifying quite a few times. And if Susan was here, she might say, what does terrifying look like? And seemingly it looks like you placing yourself, you're doing behaviors that end up in places where you're confronted with new information that contradicts what you're doing. And then I'm going to label that as part of the growth mindset, is that you're willing. And if you are that behavior from you, and it's a class of behaviors, it's not an individually identifiable behavior, is maintained at a high frequency. We know that that's reinforcing for you. Those class of behaviors, placing yourself in that context. Yes. How can you explain that to someone? Because terrifying is not a nice feeling in my experience.
No. So what, you want me to explain what terrifying feels like, or you want me to explain
is terrifying a pleasant experience?
But
it's a reinforcing experience. The behaviors associated with the consequence of terrifying context, environmental stimuli, new information that contradicts old information.
Okay. Yes. So the terrifying, the label of terrifying, the collection of whatever those sensations and whatever's happening, right, internally with me when I'm presented with new information that makes me identify it as terrified. I'm going to break this down for myself. It's a loss of being able to, or it's a feeling of a loss of being able to reach a goal, and it's a loss of that recipe, right? I like rules. I like the recipe. I want to follow it. I want to get the right answer. I want to access that reinforcer quickly and efficiently. And I want to know how to get there, right? So whenever we're presented with this new information that contradicts what we thought we knew or what we think we still know or whatever it is, or we have a new variables have entered the scene, right? It feels like to me then suddenly I don't know how to access, like, how do I get to that end point where I know how to apply this new information and I know how to use it effectively. And I could probably unpack this even further, but to me, I guess over time with repetition, I started to learn that new information. Yes, it temporarily feels like overwhelming or like I can't see the end of the road yet. I can't see how I'm going to get through this quite yet. But I know if I stick with it, that it'll be even more amazing at the end of the road, like than it was before. So there's like the starting A point, which is great. It's awesome. I know how to do it, whatever. But if I can get to the end of that, if I can work through this muddy, this learning process, this thing that isn't quite black and white, then I'm going to have even more tools in my toolkit as far as how to work with my horses. And, I don't know, just that exploring learning process is reinforcing for me because I have more tools by the end of it. I feel more equipped. I feel like I can get to my goals quicker or, in a better way by having worked through that uncomfortable process. So I don't know if that quite answers your question or clarifies what I was talking about.
So it's like you thought you knew how to access reinforcement, but the new information makes you understand that you don't actually know how to access the reinforcement, which is the behavior of your learner.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've learned new tools, but you don't know how to apply them. And your old tools that you thought were the path to reinforcement aren't. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
No, I think that's part of it. But I think also having new information tends to lose some of that feeling of control. Like, I know for me, when I go throughout life, like understanding life, understanding how to drive the car, understanding, okay, recently, this is a good outside of animal training example. I have my vehicle, my truck, and I know how to drive my truck and all that, but it always makes me just a little bit anxious that I haven't known either how to change a tire or how to change the oil or like the idea of taking this truck into a auto repair place or to get new tires and then not know which tires to get. Like, it just, that's terrifying to me because I am out of control. I'm out of my element. I don't know the information. I don't know what I'm doing. And so I told my husband the other day, a while ago, I'm like, I'm going to learn more about my truck. I'm going to learn how to take care of my truck. I'm going to learn which tires it needs. I'm going to know, just all those things, right? So I have been intentionally putting myself through these slightly uncomfortable situations to somewhat terrifying situations to be able to get to the end of the road, the other side of that, where I know how to take care of my truck. And that is worth it to me, is being able to be in control of that situation and feel like if something were to happen, I would know what to do. So that for me is really important and really reinforcing, is having that sense of independent control, and I'm not going to be just stranded out somewhere and not know what to do and feel helpless. So I think I take that same mindset into my animal training and working with horses, working with clients, working with whatever. When I'm presented with new information that either contradicts what I already know, or I just don't understand it yet. Maybe it doesn't even contradict something else. It's just new and I just don't understand it yet. It's uncomfortable at first, but I know when I get to the other side of it, I'm going to have a better understanding. I'm going to be more in control of the learning environment for my learner, and I'm going to be able to better provide them with clear information. Just overall, it's going to be a better experience for everybody involved, myself and for the learner. So that's what pushes me through that uncomfortableness when I'm in the learning process.
Do you teach this mindset to others? Is it part of your teaching?
Yes, in short, yes.
How do you do that? Do you do it and just by presenting, this is how I present myself to you as a teacher? Or do you specifically say, here's how you learn?
It depends on the situation. Obviously, I have a mentorship program where I have specific students that want to learn more about how to learn, how to teach others, how to work with their horses better. And so we have a lot of conversations like this. We just sit down and we just talk about, you know, they were in this situation. All right, well, you know, we talk about the process of working through that situation. We talk about having that more growth mindset. We talk about exploring options and getting creative. I actually just had an intern recently, and I asked her to share with me I just put her on the spot. It was not very nice of me, but I asked her if, you know, if there was one thing as she walks away, if she was there with me for 5 weeks, if she walked away, what was the biggest thing she took away from spending time with me? Because I knew that we didn't necessarily work on any crazy advanced behaviors while she was with me. And there wasn't this, any drama that she was like, oh my gosh, I learned how to do this or whatever. It was, so I was curious what she thought. And her feedback was that she felt one of the most valuable aspects was how just being creative with the learning process and teaching our learners. And when a situation comes up that is, does not look textbook, right? Something comes up and you're just like, okay, this looks different than I expected it to be. I don't really know what to do with this. I always encouraged her to just be like, take a step back. Let's analyze the situation. Let's look at all the different factors and then let's try something. We got to step in there. Like you mentioned earlier, actually, as we were talking, you got to get in there and try it and explore it. And if it doesn't work, it's no big deal. Like we'll come back out, we'll try it again, or we'll think about it and we'll go back and we'll try it. So we do a lot of stuff like that where we just, I encourage them to explore and that mistakes are, oh gosh, I wish I remembered the quote. Dang it, I can't remember the quote. But I like to think about mistakes as just another opportunity to learn and to just advance your skills and advance. If you didn't make that mistake, then you wouldn't have that feedback. And honestly, mistake is just trying something and it just doesn't have the outcome that you were looking for. So you're just like, all right, that wasn't the right outcome, or the one I wanted, I should say. So let's take a step back and see if there's a different way we can go about trying that for a different outcome. But it's not fun. It's not fun to, you know, go in, give it your all, and then it like doesn't turn out the way you wanted it to. I'm not going to claim that I'm perfect about it or I don't have my meltdowns. I definitely do. But I think after having made, you know, X amount of attempts and then on the whatever numbered attempt, it is successful. That just that feeling is just, it's addicting. It's like it's really, really reinforcing. You're like, yes, I made it. So I tend to encourage people to embrace that process and just like, you just know when we figure this out, it's going to feel so good. Like you're going to be like, yes, I know how to do this. So you're going to feel very empowered. You're going to feel very, I don't know. So yeah, that's just kind of how I view it. And we talk about that a lot. Yes. The short answer to your question.
Oh, I love it. And I'm fascinated with it. And I'm fascinated to hear how you teach creativity. I do a similar process with regards to let's just give it a go and see what happens and adjust as necessary. You made me reflect on the possible fallout from that might be that if you don't have a continual point of contact with that trainer, then it might result in them assuming positive reinforcement doesn't work, because mm-hmm. as we all know, there's a lot more to it than just throwing spaghetti at the wall. You kind of talked to what I was trying to ask before, I think, potentially not, potentially my mind's diving into areas that aren't actually there. You said mistake, you said, I'm trying to find that quote, and I thought what you were going to say was mistakes are just another opportunity to learn, and then you said mistakes are just another opportunity to learn. So now I want to know what the original quote actually was. So, but what I say, it brings me back to what I was asking before. What... In your mind, do you frame your past as old Adele or just Adele failing forward on the necessary path of making mistakes to end up at reinforcement? Oh. I see a light bulb go off in your head. That's what I was trying to ask before, but I poorly worded it. You provided the opportunity for me to word it better.
There you go. I got it now. Yes, if I were to take a moment and break down, like, I don't think of old me as like, oh, ew, throw it out with the trash. No, it was, I needed all of that, all of those experiences to be where I am now. And actually, this is something that I actively teach my students, that you're exactly where you're supposed to be, and everything that's happened up to this point has led to here. Like we can't be here without being there first, right? So there are so many stories. Oh my gosh, I could spend hours of time after time after time, when I look back, how much I feel like I failed that horse, or I failed in this experience or that experience. I mean, I had to put down a horse it was quite a few years before Tiger, but I had to put down a horse from behavioral issues that had led to medical issues. And it was just a disaster. It was just throw a match and gasoline on it. That whole thing was a disaster. But I am so, so, so grateful for the experience, because without that, I would not have understood how serious chronic pain affects behavior in our horses. Like, it did not matter. Even if I think about it now, I don't even know if I brought out the clicker and food, which I didn't at the time because I didn't know about it, or I did, but anyway, that it would have had a change, or maybe it would have had some, but not enough, because of how damaged internally this horse was. And then there was another experience where, oh man, I could just go on forever. But anyway, to answer your question, failing forward. Yes. So they were necessary progressive steps and just building a learning history that has led me to say, I needed positive reinforcement. Once I found it, I was like, that's what I need. I just knew I got to try this. Well, first Tiger pushed me because I don't know that she intentionally pushed me to do anything, but nothing else was working. And I was trying to apply everything I knew from before and everything I had learned previously, but something was missing. And that's where positive reinforcement and clicker training really filled in that spot for us. And there was up and downs, like, for sure. I learned a lot. She taught me a lot. I had to restart training with her a few times in different ways because errors during the early process. But I don't know that if I had just, maybe she was my first horse and I just liked horses, that I would have felt the need to go to clicker training. I don't know. Or even if I had, I don't know that, well, even if I weren't looking at it from a clicker training perspective, just all of the experience that I have outside of just positive reinforcement. So everything with health and their wellness and their species appropriate, like diet and lifestyle and all that, was learned mostly prior to positive reinforcement for me. So I've been able to bring all of that in and put it all together and then continue building on it with now my current courses and memberships and all that. So I'm able to bring that to my students. So I'm absolutely thankful for the quote, old me.
I think the fastest you spoke today,
sorry.
No, it's good. Once again, the goal is to get your passion talking, right? And the fastest sentence you said today was, we can't be here without being there first. Like, you got really animated when you said that.
I'm very, very passionate about that because people beat themselves, especially horse people. I don't know if it happens in with other species as much, but I find that equestrians, once they discover how much they don't know or how much they learned and they don't want to know or do that anymore, they really start to beat themselves up, myself included. I just tore myself up. I was like, I cannot believe I did this to that horse in the past. I can't believe I did that to that horse in the past. Like, it was like I had a tally in my mind of how I had wronged every horse in the past, right? Or every dog or whatever, or even my kids, all of this stuff. And I had to forgive myself for that and realize that I just didn't know what I know now. But I also needed to not just have grace for that or forgive myself for that, but I needed to also embrace it and recognize the fact that it provided me with an educational experience, one that I can take forward and benefit other people and other horses and other dogs with. Without those experiences, I wouldn't be able to help more horses and people and dogs. So not only just the grace and the forgiveness part, but the embracing and being thankful for it part was very helpful for me. And in my experience has been helpful for other people as well. But it doesn't just, like, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to be thankful for it today. Like, it takes time to work through that process and to get there mentally.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, it's arrogant potentially to stand up in front of someone and say failure is a good thing, you know, without knowing what that person has been through in life, and how and what the consequences of failures have been from their peers or their family. But I kind of feel like you, to get to positive reinforcement with your horse, Tiger, you needed to know what didn't work. Like, you couldn't get there, because if you hadn't tried something, then why would you try positive reinforcement before you tried something that was already in your toolkit? So you needed to fail each time.
And that's maybe just me personally. I'm not going to say, you know, for somebody else, they may not have needed that, or their journey is different. Their journey is different than mine. This was my journey that I was on. And for me, I think that it was very important for me to have experienced so much before positive reinforcement, because, especially because, like I've mentioned, I have a very goal oriented mindset, or I have, through my, growing up, I have always been that way. So when I look at some aspects of it, like it's very common to start a horse under saddle within 30 days or less, walk, trot, canter, all of that. And then I compare it to how I start horses now. And I have people, I tell them they need to give me at least 6 months, if not longer. I mean, if I were just to look at that alone, I would not choose positive reinforcement, unless I had all these other prior experiences like I do now, where I understand that, yes, it'll take a little bit longer, a lot of it longer, but the benefits on the backside are so much greater and are worth it for me. And I feel like for a lot of other people too. So I agree that, yes, that was necessary for me to go through that learning curve, that steep, steep learning curve.
Yeah. I love it. And it reminds me of playing Portal this week with a team, and we had to, as a team, we worked to give it a shape, someone to move a dice clockwise around a cork, then anti-clockwise around the cork, then clockwise around the cork again. and that's what this group of trainers who were asking, I don't know how to break this down. Like, I can't see that path forward. And the whole point was, you don't need to. Like, I didn't know how we were going to shape that at the start. I was the one doing the mechanics, and the team were coming up with the shaping plan as our learner left the room. But we just learned what didn't work so that we could find what did work.
Yeah, for sure. And that's definitely been my experience in the past. You know, obviously it feels a little bit nicer to just have the right answer the first time, but I do think that we can choose to embrace mistakes or past experiences and allow them to drive us forward and to learn and to grow from them, rather than letting them just haunt us or drag us down. And that's just from my personal experience.
We could potentially, each for their own, I might potentially, but I'm interested in your thoughts, go even further than that and say it's necessary to do that.
Maybe, yeah. I think everybody, yeah, I'd have to think about it more before I give you, but I would say for some people and in some situations, or even potentially everybody, I don't know, you would have to explore the options and have those. I'm using the word mistake over and over again, but I'd like to kind of, as best I can in certain situations, I'm like, let's not call it a mistake. Let's just call it, and we tried this option. We tried this
opportunity
thing, an opportunity, and it didn't give us the outcome we were looking for. So let's try something else. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, let's move on, you know? So yeah, I would agree.
You were unsure. But I like that you agree. For him, for reinforcement. Like, let's say you're a green trainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go to a workshop where you listen to this podcast. You listen to this podcast show, and so you get heaps of information, and you get some theoretical knowledge about what to do with your animal in positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. But then you don't know if you should do something because it might not be what a Dao Shuo would do. Mm-hmm. So you don't do it. Versus you do it and you get contingency-based learning. Like you get feedback, you get actual feedback from your behavior. That's where my mind was going, like, you have to actually put yourself in that situation to fail to get the feedback required.
I think I would add to that, and I would say it depends on what stage that happens at could be a make or break for their decisions going forward, or whether or not they continue trying. At least I've learned this from specifically with my kids. My three kids are very different. I can introduce, or I can allow them to explore options at, so if you have like a learning process, so let's say, you know, I don't know, you're trying to get them from point A to point Z, right? And, or point B even. And one kid, they can explore a few options that don't get them to point B, and they will still try and go for point B, and they will learn, and it will be this great learning experience. But I have, you know, another kid, I need to have a certain amount of repetitions of them getting from point A to point B very, you know, without frustration, without like any, you know, quote mistakes. And then I can, on the third, fourth, fifth time, allow them to explore some other options. And then the results will be, you know, they'll be like, okay, now I know, and they will stick with it. And, you know, it just goes from there. So I think if you introduce, at least if I'm going to transfer this over to working with potential clicker trainers with horses, so potential students, if they give it a go, if they listen to a few podcasts, they watch, they read a book, they watch or even do a course or something, but they don't have somebody right there guiding them, and they go out and try it, and maybe they'll, quote, make a mistake or two, you know, a few times, and then they may be quick to give up. Whereas you'll have another person that's like, I know this will work because I see it work for these other people. I must just be doing, it must just not be the right way, or I need some help or whatever. So they'll try and find other options to help them, or try different setups, or they'll make changes, and then they'll get that, you know, they'll finally arrive at point B and they'll get that reinforcer, and they're like, yes, they're good with it. So I think it depends on the individual to some aspect, but I do agree in general that allowing for just the exploring of the options is very important for the learning process, and being commit. Even if I were to take it one step deeper, I would say that because I had explored so many other options prior to coming to positive reinforcement, it has made me all that more committed to it. Not only because I see the results, but because I have tried everything else. So we could, you know, break that much smaller back down into that initial, like we're just experiencing, you know, teaching our horse not to mug us. It, the effectiveness, the result of that training practice is, I'm trying to keep my thoughts concise here. My brain goes a little ADHD on me sometimes and starts ping-ponging around. So when you look at the individual learner, so the human trying to teach the horse not to mug, we're just going to stick with that example. If I were to leave somebody to explore how to achieve that on their own with some information, but maybe not enough information for them as an individual, they may be quick to give up, or they may choose to continue to, you know, work through it until they get the results that they're looking for. If you look at that from an even wider scale, that person's learning history up to that point. So maybe let's say that they're working with a horse that has a long history of mugging. They've tried everything else. They've tried all these different methods, and this is their last ditch effort, kind of like where I was in my situation. It didn't really matter that I messed up quite a few times in the beginning because I knew there were no other options. I had to keep trying it, and it had to work. And so it made me very dedicated to finding the results that I saw everybody else having. But if I didn't have that big, long extensive history of, you know, exploring other options and them not giving me the results I was looking for, I may have been quick to be like, well, that doesn't work, and I'm going to move on. Does that make sense? Am I being at all clear?
You are. What it's making me think, and then I'm conscious of the time, so I'll give you feedback about how it resonated with me, and then we'll ask you for final words, and then I'm going to invite a consideration of, because I really want to talk about Tiger, of making this a two-part episode, and just wrapping up with our conversation thus far for part one. But what it made me think of is you described growth mindset versus fixed mindset. It's not working, so I need to learn more and keep trying, versus not working, so I'm going to give up, which is part of a fixed mindset.
Okay.
And so the component that I've intentionally tried to rinse as much information and perspective from you as we can in this episode is that potentially the first thing we need to ensure, I don't like how I worded that, what has potential value for consideration moving forward is teaching what failure means, and teaching the cue of that didn't get the result we want, that cues me to do X behavior. Which is, there's something that I teach, but it is basically to try something different.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm going to have to think about it a little bit more. I see what you're saying. And yeah, so I guess, okay, I'll wrap up kind of what I think you're saying. You're saying that first, before we really go into it, the learner, the human learner, needs to have needs to be in that growth mindset of, it may not work the first time. We're going to explore options until we get to the result we're looking for. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's an opportunity.
Yes, I agree. I gotcha.
Let's leave it there then.
Okay, sounds good.
And I'm grateful for you sharing with us today, because we've been exploring, learning via the podcast show and within our membership, what it means to learn and what kind of thoughts and processes can be beneficial for that. And we've explored one offering from society, the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And I wasn't expecting this today, but here we are. I didn't know this about you. I didn't know that you thought this way. So it was a gift. So thank you for sharing that gift with us. But like I said, we'll turn this into two episodes. Is that?
That sounds good to me.
Awesome. Well, with all of that in mind, before we do wrap up part one, can you tell everyone listening where they can go to find out more about you and get in touch?
Yes. So the best place to start is going to be my website, thewillingequine.com. You can also find me on pretty much every social media platform. Like I mentioned, I'm very involved in social media. That includes TikTok and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and pretty much everything else. So primarily, though, I'm on Instagram. It's thewillingequine. Just search that on Instagram. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm based in Texas, outside of Austin, Texas. I do most of my work through long distance. So I have an online membership and courses and stuff, although I do have local students as well and clients. So feel free to reach out to me through my website. I have contact information on there, and I look forward to chatting with anybody that wants to reach out to me.
Wonderful. And we will, of course, link to all of that in the show notes. Adele, this has, like I said, been an unexpected journey in this episode today, but a pleasurable and beneficial one, I'm sure. So from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and hang out with us today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com then click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.